Pages back with me again, and another book that she's introduced me to is called The Crooked Heart, and it's by a woman called Lissa Evans. Now, Val, I think we both discovered that we knew very little about this writer.
Never heard of her before.
Well, I did some research, as I always do, and I found that actually she's not called Lissa Evans in real life. She's called Felicity Kenvin, and she qualified as a doctor in the 1983 and worked in medicine before she became a stand-up comic. Now, that may put some people off, but don't worry, because she's gone on further since then. She's produced and directed lots of stuff on television, including Father Ted, The Kumars at Number 42. Oh, and Have I Got News For You? Probably some of it rather than all of it, because it's been going for many years. But she's also written 4 novels for adults and at least 1 for children, for which she's been nominated for a Costa Award and got various other medals and awards for her writing as well. And I think you think she's quite a good writer.
I think she is.
Now, The Crooked Heart, it takes place in England, a lot of it in St Albans.
Yes.
Curiously enough.
Starting on Hampstead Heath.
That's right, because it's wartime.
It is.
Let's go back to the beginning. Hampstead Heath is where our hero, Noel, lives with his
godmother,
Mattie.
And Noel, he's about 10 years old. He's not very physically attractive. He's got sticking out ears. He's a very, very bright boy. And Mattie, his godmother, has a PhD. She was a suffragette, and she went to prison for being a suffragette. And they lived together on Hampstead Heath in a big old house. There's a very, very strong bond of affection between the two. Mattie, unfortunately, is beginning to suffer from senile dementia. I don't think Noel has ever heard of it, but he knows that she forgets words.
At first it was quite funny. "The box of things," Mattie would say, waving her mauve-veined hands vaguely round the kitchen. "The box of things for making flames. It's a song, Noel. The box of things for making flames, I can't recall their bloody names." Or, "That church," she'd say, standing at the top of Hampstead Heath, gazing down at the scribble of blue and grey that was London. "The one with the dome. Remind me what it's called? St Paul's Cathedral? Of course it is. The architect has a bird's name. Owl? Ostrich? Wren?"
Noel is very concerned about this and starts putting labels on things like the oven, the table, the chairs. Mattie is very annoyed about this and takes them all off again. They have a very good life together. Now, this is at the beginning of the last World War. And Noel goes to a prep school, obviously funded by Mattie. We don't know much about his parents. They're just not there. We're not told very much about them at all. And then the prep school has to be evacuated out of London. And Mattie gets a letter saying that he has got to go somewhere in the countryside with his school. "We won't bother about that," says Mattie. "You don't want to go, do you?" "No, we don't have to pay any attention to that." And that's where I think The Crooked Heart starts, because when I was first recommended this book, I looked at the title, The Crooked Heart, and I thought, oh, it's a romance. I'm not really keen on romances. But the main thing is the word crooked, because there's crookedness all the way through the book. It's wartime. Things are difficult. There's black market. There's people trying to make Dawn very little money and cutting corners. There's Mattie with no regard for authority whatsoever. And poor Mattie, as she gets worse and worse, she says, "I'll educate you." And in fact, they go to museums and they go to art galleries, and he is a very well-educated boy. And then one day she goes for a walk on the common and doesn't come back. And Noel goes to find her, and she has died on her beloved Hampstead Heath. And he has to go and live with some distant cousins of Mattie. And they're living in the suburbs. He has to go to a state school. He is abysmally bored because everything is so easy for him. And he gets bullied because he talks posh. And because he knows so much more than the others, so he tends not to talk much at all. And he writes things down in his little booklet, and he writes horrible things about the other boys. But he uses a code, a very simple code, so when they look, they just think it's gobbledygook. And then, of course, the school there has to be evacuated out, and they're evacuated to St Albans. They are taken round, and all the attractive young ones are taken first. It's just left with a big lump of a girl, which nobody wants because they think she'll eat more than her rations and everything's rationed and hard to get. And Noel, who limps along because he had polio when he was a child, and he limps when he's tired, and his great jug ears. That's when we meet the character called Vera, or V for short. V doesn't really want to have anybody living with her. She has got one son who is very lazy. She's got a mother, and the mother lives with her, and the son lives with her. The mother fell and hit her head when she found V was pregnant, and she has not been able to speak ever since. And she lies there on her bed, and V does everything for her. She gets her Parma violet cashews. She's actually a very amusing character because she writes long letters to Winston Churchill and Herbert Morrison, long chatty letters to Winston, advising him how to run the war. And once she got a letter back, which means that she writes more and more, but she has to have a special sort of ink. She has to have special paper. Poor V, who is trying to look after them all, has to go all round looking for all the special things her mother wants. Donald, her son, is a lazy young man, and doesn't hold jobs down because he doesn't turn up on time or because it's too hard. V hasn't got enough money to manage on, and they are turned out of their flat because she hasn't paid the rent. She has had several jobs, and for sort of minor peccadilloes, she has lost the jobs. She worked in the Bolito factory in St. Albans at one time, and there was a little bit of disagreement over some rubbish that she took home with her, but she shouldn't have taken it. She just bends the rules to try and make life a bit better. And then she finds this place, which is a scrap merchant, with a very basic room over the top, and as long as her lazy son will work in the salvage place, they can live in the room above free of charge. So there is a life of some sort for her. And then she sees these two children being brought round by the officers who are finding places for them.
She'd just started pushing half an onion and the heel of a loaf into the mincer when the evacuees came back along the lane. Only two left now. A great lump of a girl who looked as if she'd eat you out of house and home, and the limping creature with the ears. Who on earth would want to look after a crippled evacuee, she wondered. You'd not only have to feed them and deal with the lice and the London cheek, but you'd be forever at the doctor, going back and forth, and... An idea rolled into her head, fully formed like a marble. V paused for a second or two to think about it, and then snatched off her apron and tied on a headscarf. "I've got to pop out, Mum," she said. "Won't be long. Back soon."
She hasn't got a bed for him to sleep on. There's a bed for her mother, there's a bed for her son, and she works out that as her son works in the night times, the boy can have the bed in the night times. He has to get out when Donald comes home. Donald again, why hasn't he been conscripted? He went for a medical, and they found he had a heart murmur. And he has found a way of making money, which is to stand in for people who are going to have a medical so that he'll have all their details, he'll be examined, they'll find the heart murmur, and then they won't have to get called up. And he gets paid quite well out of this and uses the money for his own ends. So there we have Noel, who is living with V. He is going to school. His old schoolmaster has come with all the children, same children who bully him, the same children he doesn't really talk very much. And then V has this idea of making money, which is to get collecting tins, which are for the church or for various other wartime things, to stick a label over it saying Spitfire Collection and go and knock on doors and ask for money for the Spitfire Collection. And if she has a boy with her, a child with her, she would make more money. Poor Noel is so unhappy, very, very unhappy. He's at a school where most of the children are well below his intelligence. He misses Matty so much. They had such a close bond of affection between them and understanding. Life was always interesting because she'd introduced him to so many different things.
What shall we do today? Go and visit poor old Rameses II at the British Museum? See if he's managed to unwrap himself yet, and then lunch at the university club? Or would you prefer lions? Yes, better puddings there, I always think. Incidentally, did I ever tell you about Roberta in the British Museum, chaining herself to Laocoon and his sons?
And now his life is awful. He is so lonely. He's a 10-year-old boy. His beloved godmother is dead. He's living with a woman who hasn't got the intelligence, and she hasn't got the background of his godmother. He's at a school where he's not learning anything. His ability is above their levels, and life is dreadful for this little boy.
He had never been bored with Matty. Never, never, never. And now he was bored all the time. All the time. It was unbearable, like following mile after mile of grey string, with nothing at the end of it but a grim, distant adult version of himself.
You understand Noel, you have enough information about him, you follow him through the situation, and he enlightens you in a way in his relationship with V about her, and she has this relationship with her son and her mother. It works very well, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, to begin with, he doesn't like V at all, and V tolerates him because she thinks it's a way of making money. But as the book progresses, and as they have all these experiences together, both of them get a certain respect for each other. And it's from that that really, everything has to start with respect, doesn't it? And the feeling that they have for each other grows from that respect gradually as the book goes on. So to begin with, she takes Noel round collecting for the Spitfire Fund, I think it was. And she doesn't make very much money. When Donald comes home and Noel has to get out of bed, he reads the local paper and he finds that there's been a collection in Harpenden where they made £96. And he tells V this, and V said, how? Because she'd only made a few pence in her tin. And he said, well, you go about it the wrong way. He says to her, you're doing it all wrong. And she thinks at first he means morally wrong. She says, well, I haven't got enough money. But he's a very clever boy, and he thinks of a better way of doing it. And he said, you should go to places in the suburbs of London, like Cricklewood, and you should collect for something different, like widows and orphans. He wanted to show V his house on Hampstead Heath, where he used to live, and air raid warnings go off. And they meet a warden who is not a very nice man at all. He chivvies them down into an air raid shelter. Noel remembers his godmother taking him to someone who lived in a flat, a big house where there were about six different flats. And he says, if we go there, we can ring each bell and we can go to all these different people. And so that's what they do. And they get a few pence here, a few pence there, sometimes as much as a pound. And then they go into this flat where there's an old lady who suffers from dementia and who welcomes them in and says, how lovely, it's such a long time since I've seen you. You know, was it at Henley where we last met and things like this, you see? And looks at Noel and says, oh, and how you've grown. You're such a big boy now. She doesn't know either of them from Adam, of course. And she takes them into the house, which is a real mess. It was just like Mattie's house had got towards the end when she couldn't keep things straight. And Noel realises that she's very like his godmother. So like, in fact, that when he sees a little medal there, he knows that it's a medal that the suffragettes got when they went to prison, and the marks on it shows how many times or how long they've been in prison. And he really feels for this old lady. And when she says, oh, yes, I must give you money for your collection, and gives them a £20 note, and V hears the rustle of paper, and she knows that there's more there. So they go back again and again, and V has quite a collection of money. And she is able to leave the flat over the salvage place and move into a proper nice little flat where they all have a bed. Noel is quite unhappy because he knows they're taking advantage of this old lady. And in his mind, he's equating her with his godmother. And then the son, Donald, is having an affair with a foreign girl who's working in a hotel, and she's leading him on and getting money out of him. He unfortunately is standing in for a man, a very unpleasant man, who is having an affair with a younger woman, married, but he's having an affair with a younger woman. I think he's given Donald something like £60 to stand in for him.
At his medical...
For his medical conscription. Right. And unfortunately, the doctor's called away for an emergency and does a very quick medical on him and says, yes, you're fine, you can be conscripted. And the man is so cross about this and feels he's been scammed, and he's chasing after Donald all the way through the book. In little bits it comes in where he's trying to get him and beat him up because the man has now got to go in the army and he's got to lose his lady love. And so Donald gets a message to go to London, and thinking it's another way of making money, doesn't know London very well and gets Noel to go with him. And when they get there, he says, you wait outside, and he's beaten up very badly. And Noel realises that Donald's being beaten up and managed to help him escape, but is lost himself in London. And when V wants to know where Noel is, and Donald says, well, I don't know, couldn't care less.
And this is where V really thinks about her situation. She looks at
the situation.
V stood and looked at him, this large man in her kitchen who had never learned, never been taught, the meaning of obligation, and with a slow surge of despair that was almost like nausea, she realised that the calamities of the day, every last one of them, had simply been lying in wait for her. Not the actions of cruel fate, but a series of tripwires lovingly laid by herself. She'd asked for nothing from her mother and her son, and she'd expected nothing from them either. And now she'd received nothing, not even thanks. She was face down in the mud and on her own. "I'll have to go and get him," she said matter-of-factly.
Her mother has decided to elope, and she's gone off and left her with somebody who used to come and visit her. Her son has given her nothing after she'd given him all her love and all her care. They've both left her, these people that she's invested her life in. But she's got Noel.
It's a very crazy relationship between people, but it's very believable. And the author has got a very good mood of that wartime environment, hasn't she?
Yes, she has. Good. And sort of making do and mend with the few bits you have. Vera gives her egg to her son. We used to get one egg a week. Mm. We used to get 2 ounces of butter a week. You probably don't remember that, Rob,
I do remember my mother telling me about it. Yes.
I went to college in 1951. People don't realise we were still on rations then. We were given our 3 ounces a week, it was then. And I didn't like butter, so I used to take it home for my parents. And all the make, do and mend that there was in that time. V had a job making flowers to go on hats for the hat people in Luton. And she was paid so much for making so many flowers to go on hats. And then they didn't want flowers and they wanted military things to go on hats. And that was a home job. And lots of people did those home jobs for quite a long time after the war. Very, very badly paid.
Yeah. Great fun. I enjoyed it very much. Mm. Thank you very much, Bill. The extracts from The Crooked Heart by Lissa Evans were read by Joe Unwin. We're grateful to Calibre Audio for providing us with a copy of this recording and for allowing us to use extracts. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music.